Anything, the exact, the correct definition of Euclidean length is the square root. Square root of. Of the product, the scalar product of x by itself.
Well, the scalar product, then we find again the well-known notion of linear independence. Linearly independent vectors, linearly dependent vectors, it's the same also if we are on C to N. Subspaces of C to N, dimension of subspaces, there is no difference with the real case. An important situation that we will see more than one time in the following of the year, situation which is connected with the scalar product. Two vectors, x and y, in C to N, whose scalar product is zero, are said to be orthogonal. In R2, this situation is a geometric, easily recognizable situation of perpendicularity. When the product by itself is 1, that is the Euclidean length is 1, the vector is said to be normal or normalized of length 1. Normalized vector. Or unitary vector also. If we consider a subspace of Cn, in which way you can imagine subspace geometrically, if we are over R, the subspaces of R to 3 are planes, straight lines passing through the original, or the trivial subspaces formed by the origin. It's a subset of C to N, which is a vector in space. It is useful to consider S orthogonal, which is another subspace if you call X a vector in S and a vector in S orthogonal. The definition, I give you now the definition. The definition is that y h by x is 0. So S orthogonal is formed by all the vectors of C to N orthogonal to all the vectors of S. Geometrically, if S is a plane of a space, S orthogonal is the orthogonal straight line
passing through the origin, orthogonal to the assigned to the plane representing x.
So it's okay. Why I remind this situation, which is a well-known geometric situation, because in this case an important theorem holds regarding the dimensions. And regarding the so-called Dirac sum of subspaces, I give only a sketch of these facts. Don't worry, it's not don't need to go in depth inside these things. The theorem. The whole space is the direct sum of these two subspaces. I don't give here the definition of direct sum. Simply, it means that every vector here can be expressed in a unique way as a sum of this vector in this space and another vector in the orthogonal. But the important consequence concerning the dimensions is that n, which is the dimension of C to n, is the sum of dimensions of the two subspaces. In general, when you sum two subspaces, this relation does not hold. When we have the Dirac sum, in this particular case, S and its orthogonal, the dimensions sum together. In the example I suggested you before, the plane, dimension 2, line, dimension 1, we are in R3, so 2 plus 1 makes 3. Always about the scalar products. Go back to unitary matrices. We have said that they are good matrices. So it can be interesting to say some other property enjoyed by these matrices. If you consider one of these matrices U unitary, recall the definition. Assume that, for simplicity, U is 2 by 2, column x sub 1, x sub 2, the two columns of U, and represent in a schematic way the product rows by columns. This is UH. So its rows are the conjugate transposes of the two columns of U. We have here x sub 1h, x sub 2h. Since U is unitary, the product must be this. If you compare the four elements of I and the four results of the four products row by
con,
we have x1 h by x1 x sub 1 h by x2 0. Here we have the same product with the reverse order, and the last x2 h x2, right? So we find that it is this this is true obviously for every order, and also in the case n by n, and we observe that the columns of a unitary matrix have this simple property. In general, x sub I column in position I of U unitary, you should consider all the products J I, you have one if the indices are equal, 1 1 2 2, if J equals I, otherwise 0. This means that we are in this very strong situation. We have n columns which are linearly independent. Why? I have not yet spoken of inverses, but I have already written that inverse of U is UH, so the inverse exists, and a matrix is invertible if and only if its columns are linearly independent. But we here have a stronger property. Not only they are linearly independent, but they have this behavior with regard to the scalar product. This behavior is denoted by orthonormality. That is, all are orthogonal in this case. Colonne perpendicolare, orthogonale, or are one length. When the indices are equal, this is the square of the Euclidean length, and the length is one. Orthogonal or not? A set of n linearly independent vectors of C to n is also called a base, the base of a vector space. The concluding statement is this: the columns of a unitary matrix are an orthonormal basis of Cn. The columns of a unitary matrix are a basis Cn of n by n, n is the order of the matrix.
Well,
if we trust unitary matrices, it seems it can be useful to construct a basis of orthonormal orthonormal. It is the most important thing. I said it seemed useful to be able to construct, to obtain in some way orthonormal basis of C to N. Because if I am able to construct an orthonormal basis, I can construct a unitary matrix. And this matrix is behaved well, as I have said. This is to introduce a well-known procedure, well-known in linear algebra, which is devoted to obtain an orthonormal basis from a generic basis singular in time. From a generic basis. Maybe you already know this procedure, this method. This is called Gram-Schmidt orthogonalization. I remind it in a few lines. A generic basis, call it x sub 1, x sub n. In the file you will find k instead of n, because the process can be applied also to a generic set of linearly independent vectors. We choose a basis, so we must go up to n. You define t sub 1 equal to x1 and y1 sub 1 as t sub 1 normalized. This is the first time we face a normalization. When I have a vector different from zero, a non-zero vector, this is tai 1. Tai 1 cannot be the zero vector, because tai 1 is equal to x1. X1 is a vector of a basis. The one is different from zero. The normalization consists simply in multiplying the vector to be normalized by the inverse of its Euclidean length, that is the inverse of square root of T1H by T1. This vector is the first vector
of the new basis. The first vector is obliged to satisfy only one condition.
It has to be normalized.
And we have constructed it just in this way. The other vectors are obtained by these formulas. T sub k, k goes to from 2 up to n, is defined as the correspondent x minus the sum of these terms, sum for j going from 1 up to it's better to use the index t sub I, x sub I, j going from 1 to up to I minus 1. Here are the products y, j, h, x sub I by y, j. This for, this is I from 2 up to n. And from this vector, we obtain the correspondent y. Yj is obtained by normalizing t sub I. We should prove that all these vectors ty are orthogonal to the previous y vectors y. For the normalization, there are no problems. That is a forced operation. All these vectors are normalized. So to be sure that we have obtained a set of the kind we are searching for, we should prove that T sub I is orthogonal to any Y sub I for I going to 1 up to Y minus 1. The orthogonality of this implies the orthogonalities of the corresponding y, because y is obtained by t by means of a normalization. The proof is not very interesting by itself, but here we may be useful to prove the simple case for. T equal to you, we show the orthogonality between T and Y for E equal to. Just to see, we can use the various algebraic properties we have already recorded. That is, we must become familiar with some kind of almost automatic algebraic passages regarding these kind of objects, but I want you to be always very careful, because some properties do not hold, such as commutativity. Sub 2 H is a conflict. Excuse me. Here I must use another index. Dy orthogonal to the previous y. Y sub k, with k going from 1 to previous y minus 1. Okay. So if E is equal to 2, I have only for E equal to 2, we have to show that the only value that can be taken by k is 1. So I have to prove this. I have the definition of the generic T. Definition is this formula. I write here T sub 2. Here is some. These geometrically can be seen as projections of the vector x over the vectors y. Anyway, for E equals to 2, we have only one value of j. J goes from 1 to 2 minus 1. 1, 1. So here is only the term y1hx2. This is a number, this is a scalar product that multiplies y sub 1. Okay. I consider, I write down all the various messages. T sub 1 h is properties of the conjugate plus position. X2H, I have sum of vectors. The conjugate transpose of a sum of vectors is the sum of the conjugate transpose. So we have here H, and then we have to do the conjugate transpose of this vector. But this vector is a number by another vector. So we pick the number and take the conjugate, minus the conjugate of this is, can be expressed with a bar over, or also inverting the factors, and write x sub 2 h by y sub 1. This vector must be conjugate transpose. Then I plug in this formula here. All this is T to H by another scalar product y sub 1. Distributivity of the scalar products. The properties of the scalar product, you don't have to remind or because you can develop this expression just applying the products, the properties of the complex numbers and of the product row by column. Nothing else. So you can see this as a scalar product, but also as a product of matrices vectors according to the usual row by column rule. product between matrices and vectors enjoys distributivity. So we multiply this by y1 vector by this is a number. Now, we know that the vectors y that we are obtaining are normalized. So, this is the Euclidean length squared, which you would know. There is one that I forgot. This product is 1. Zero. These are numbers we write and rewrite this kind of problem. So the result is a number, the number is zero because the difference between two equal scalar products. This means that these two vectors are orthogonal. The same development can be made for the general case. The correct proof of this result would be an induction proof. But the crucial point is this. So now we are able to obtain from any base. Here is a numerical example. See, yes. The numerical example starting from a particular basis. Another important class of matrices is also in optimization. A class of matrices you will find many times in optimization problems. The so-called definite matrices they are a subset of Hermitian matrices. In optimization you will have only real matrices, so there will be a subclass of symmetric matrices. But there is no problem. Well, the definite let A be and square by n Hermitian matrix. So we are inside the set of Hermitian matrices. If this is the definition for any x belonging to C to n non-zero, the number xh by a by x is strictly greater than zero, then a is said, is called positive, we put in first position definite. Positive definite. Let us comment the definition. A squared is Hermitian square
The quantity x is a generic vector, non-zero. This quantity, this inequality,
has makes sense. What does it mean?
See, the quantity,
as we often will do, as you have already seen, in a schematic way, xh is a row vector,
a
square matrix, addition, x is the same vector in formal column. When we have, when you have an expression in which several objects interact, objects that are matrices, vectors, interact in products, these products must be well defined. I can multiply two objects of this kind only if the number of columns of the first factor is equal to the number of rows of the second factor. This is the unique condition of existence of the product of vector matrix, matrix, vector matrix, matrix. Here all is correct. I can multiply a row vector by matrix. The result is a row vector. Then this row vector is multiplied by a column vector, that is a scalar product. The important thing to observe is that the result is a scalar, a number. Not only. We are on Cn, so I expect, I am sure, that alpha is a complex number. Indeed, alpha is a real number in this case, because A is Hermitian. To see this, consider alpha bar, the conjugate of alpha, and apply again the usual properties of the transposition, conjugate transposition property. Alpha bar is the same as alpha h. Over the number, the h and the bar are the same thing. The conjugate transpose of number is the conjugate of the number. But alpha is the way in which I have called xh a x. Apply this operator H to the product, the property that we have seen 1 hour ago. This is the product of the conjugate transposes in reversed order. We have seen this for two factors, but it is true for any number of factors. So we have XHH. XH is the last X. AH. And then the first X, H twice. A trivial property I have not reminded you is that
for any object A, H is again A. So we conclude finding that the result is H, AH, X. That is, again, alpha. So
So we have found that alpha bar is equal to alpha. That is, alpha is real. So in the definition, if we want, we can add here the real number. This is due to the fact that A is Hermitian. Well, if this is real number, we can compare it with zero. If we don't know that this is real number, this inequality does not have sense. We can compare only real number. Complex numbers can be compared. The definition is a good definition, so in the sense that that the inequality is correct, so we see this definition. We add, as you imagine, that besides positive definite, we define in the same way the negative definite, the semi, the positive semi-definite, and the negative semi-definite according to this obvious scheme. When the inequality is this, the inequality that I have written, we have the positive. Inequality in this direction, positive, negative. When the inequalities are weak, greater or equal, we have positive semi-definite, and negative semi-definite. I can say that one is not very satisfied when reads this definition. Why? Because to see if a Hermitian matrix is or not positive definite, one could verify this inequality for every vector of C to n. This, if you write down, I do this in a simple way because it takes only 1 minute. You see that you obtain a non-linear system of inequalities. If you have you take a real in dimension 2, so it is symmetric, so we can, I don't know, A11, A22, A12, A12, these two must be equal. We multiply at left and at right by the two vectors, row vector, column vector, the same vector. We are over the real, so we don't have to consider the conjugates. And we, this is not a linear system, it's a non-linear equation. And you find
I skip the intermediate computation, you should find this. You must find a number. You perform the two products. If I am right, you would find this. X1 squared, X2 squared, the mixed product. This is only one equation, not a system of equation, but is quadratic, no linear. And this is not simple. It's another problem to apply the definition. We will see, I hope next time, that these matrices in particular, consider the positive definite, play the equivalent role that is played by positive numbers over the real. So these matrices behave you see this from this behave like positive number, so the negative behave like negative number. The check if a matrix is or not inside this set is itself a problem that can be reproduced to the eigenvalues of these matrices, or to other a little bit more complicated conditions on the determinants of the submatrices of A. We will see these aspects the next time. Okay? Stop here. See you Tuesday.